Hey folks, Ned here. Over the past 25 years, I've talked with thousands of parents of high school students, parents who care deeply about their kids' education and how they deal with stress and the pressure to succeed. But these parents need to work with a team they trust won't just pile on more pressure to achieve better grades and scores. This is why I started Prep Matters in 1997, to create a different kind of experience for test preparation, tutoring, and college admissions planning. This podcast and my books reflect our company's philosophy and approach to helping students. If you have a high school student and would like to talk about putting in place a plan, please get in touch with us. Visit our website at prepmatters.com or call 301-951-0350. That's 301-951-0350. Thanks, and now back to our show.
What I started advising parents to do is to tell the kid, I'm looking forward to sending you to college. I'm looking forward to spending huge amounts of money to get you educated. Well, I'm not going to do it. If I took $60,000 and I just flushed down the toilet, you wouldn't respect me. But if I put down $60,000 in tuition for you and you aren't ready, it's the same thing. Kids who go to school, who start college and they flunk the first semester, see a lot of kids who talk to parents and they're going back on academic probation. They never do better the second semester. And they just aren't ready. You think about how many young people can't afford housing. Take $60,000, you've got a pretty nice down payment on a house, you know. Just so many families that I work with, they don't really have much for retirement. They saved it all for college. I want this to be a good investment. And so I advise parents to say, I want to send you, and I'm not going to send you until you're ready. And let's talk about what I need to see to know you're ready.
Welcome to the Self-Driven Child Podcast. I'm your host, Ned Johnson, and co-author with Dr. William Stickshrude of the books The Self-Driven Child, The Science and Sense of Giving Your Kids More Control Over Their Lives, and What Do You Say? How to Talk with Kids to Build Motivation, Stress Tolerance, and a Happy Home. If you're the parent of a high school age student, or the teacher of a high school age student, or a high school age student yourself, you probably spend a lot of time thinking about how do I get into college and doing all the things that you think are necessary. And then once you get the news and you open those envelopes, okay, emails, and get all the choices, there's celebration. There may be tears, but either way, there's probably a big sigh of relief of, oh, thank goodness, things are all set. But are they? Getting into college is, of course, a big part of high school for many folks. But the next stage of life is not just going to college, but succeeding in college. And the statistics show that far, far, far too many young people, including really academic students, start college and they not only don't thrive, they don't survive. They don't persist through their first year of college. And that's a big concern, which is why I'm delighted to have my friend and co-author Bill Stickshrude join me today to talk about a chapter from The Self-Driven Child called Who's Ready for College? I'm Ned Johnson, and this is The Self-Driven Child Podcast. Hi, Bill. It's that time of year when we are thinking about kids going to college, though I suppose in America, we're always thinking about kids going to college. Really, we're thinking about kids going to college now. We're recording this in April, when folks have heard where they're getting into, what their choices are, and will soon be making a choice. And the good news is our work as parents is done, and for students is mostly done, right? Clear sailing between now and college, right?
Yeah. Well, for many people, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
The challenge for us is that we see so many kids who get into college and are home before the first semester is over.
Yeah.
Several years ago, I just started to notice how many, in part because I see so many kids who have learning disabilities or ADHD or bad anxiety, that I started to just notice how many kids are really home by before Thanksgiving. They start it and they just aren't ready to do it. And almost invariably, what I notice is that those students, they weren't running their own life in high school. And I think that it's taught me that if you go into this, what we describe as the most dysregulated learning, living environment outside of a war zone, namely a college campus, you aren't really good at running your own life, it's a really tough climb.
What jumped to mind for me when you're saying they don't have experience running their own lives, two thoughts came to mind for me. One is that for a lot of students, young people, they feel like their parents or their teachers or someone other than them is running their life for them and kind of telling them what to do. But it also occurred to me that there's some people who are sort of run by life, you know, in that, you know, it's a constant, you know, the next thing, the next thing, the next thing without, well, Richard Friedman talks about, you know, stress plus rest, right, is the way to develop stress tolerance and resilience. And for so many young people, it's this constant treadmill and never, never ending. And in that situation, there's also a low sense of control because it's perhaps not driven by what they want to do and setting goals and going after them, but a constant fear, if I don't.
Yeah.
There was a piece that I wrote for Washington Post a few years ago, inspired by talking to a young woman who had just gotten an early decision to her first choice in Ivy League University. Woohoo, you know, get out the calamine lotion. No offense to people who went to Ivy League colleges. But I asked her, I said, so now that you're in, like, what are you looking forward to? And she said, I have no idea. I spend all my time, you know, trying to meet other people's expectations. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I said, so what you're telling me is you, in many ways, you don't feel like you have any motivation to do things unless it's to meet someone else's expectation of you. And she said, yeah, that's about right. And I encouraged her, I said, I'd suggest that between now and the end of the school year, certainly now and when you go to school, to spend some time trying to reflect on what is it that you want to do? What is it you care about? Because a motivational system that's driven by only meeting other people's expectations of you is a somewhat sad existence. And two, that fear-based motivation works until it doesn't, right? You know, because stress responses kind of can wear out.
Well, I think that's really well put, Ned. But that's why so many kids that we see, it's not just the slackers that you know, kids who never work very hard to go to college and they come home by November. It's so often the kids who are driven themselves mercilessly for you know, sacrifice anything to get into an elite college, who get in there and the idea of I can't do this for four more years, they're home by November.
Simply put, if it were the case that struggles with school and especially ones born of struggle with anxiety and other mental health disorders, if those were only at universities that, frankly, none of us have spent much time thinking about or heard much about, that'd be one thing. But of course, the mental health challenges at elite universities dwarf those at schools where it's basically open enrollment.
Yeah. You'll recall that I was in Houston talking about the self-driven child before the pandemic. And I asked this group of student leaders, how many of you want to be happy as an adult? You know, they all kind of said, oh, they raised their hand.
Trick question.
And I said, what do you understand it takes to be happy as an adult? And this one kid said, I think I speak for all of us that we think that if we get into a good enough college, everything is set. Huh. And I'm thinking about Laurie Santos's work, the psychologist at Yale, who's just struck by how these freshmen, these undergraduates, they get themselves into arguably the most prestigious university in the world, and they're still miserable. That didn't do it. And I think that so many kids we see have the idea that the most important, and parents too, and just I think mistakenly, but parents too have the idea that the most important outcome for their whole child and adolescence is where they go to college. Mm. And I was talking with a group of kids last summer in Ohio of middle school and high school students, and they all said basically, I am my grades. I just think we want to think about this differently. I mean, I want kids to be well-educated.
Yeah.
But I want them to use college in a way that really helps them, because the research suggests it doesn't really matter very much where you go to college. What matters is what you do when you're there.
Right.
And we've seen so many kids who are really, they're really nice kids. They're very smart, but they spend, you know, way too much time drinking and smoking pot and doing psychedelics and using Adderall and sleeping 5 to 6 hours at night in a way that it's just a waste of their time. It's a waste of their money. And that's why I think, speaking for the two of us, we focus so strongly on making sure that what do you have to do to show that you're ready for college? Many of the families I work with, they say, well, I know he's not ready, but I can't talk him out of it. Like it's a God-given right. you know, and I think that these are more kids who have ADHD and they're managing their schoolwork that independently. And the ideal, it's not an entitlement. You know, and I think it's something that we want parents to really be clear about. I want to see that my kid, I've got a really high achieving kid. Is he or she burned out? Does she have the life skills to manage this completely dysregulated learning environment, living environment? Could she get herself to bed on time? Should she get herself out of bed? Can she manage stress adequately? And I think that these things that we talk about in the chapter in the Self-Driven Child called Who's Ready for College, these are things that we should be looking for, because these are the things that really predict whether a kid is going to be successful in college or not.
Right.
Another time I was in Houston, I happened to mention this most elite school in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And this counselor came up to me as a psychotherapist later and said, I'm at the manager clinic here, and we know this school in D.C. really well, because the manager clinic is a very prestigious mm-hmm. mental health center in Houston. We know it really well because so many kids, they get into the top colleges in the country. But as soon as they get a B, as soon as they realize that everybody here is as smart as I am, as soon as the girl they want to go out and ghost them, they take a medical leave of absence, they come here for treatment. And as you said, the tool of one, they just don't have enough experience running their own life. You know, solving their own problems, you know, thinking about what's important to me.
Well, and one of the things that's interesting about that is all of those experiences of running their own life, solving their own problems, you know, blessing of a skinned knee, you know, gift of failure, on and on it goes. What a lot of times people don't perhaps think about as much as they might is what those experiences are doing, not to college resumes, but what they're doing to people's brains.
Yeah.
And when we think about stress tolerance and emotion resilience, it's really the ability to bounce back and, you know, to handle things in stride. And it's wiring brains with executive functions. And what, you know, most people know about these of, you know, organization planning, problem solving, so on and so forth. But I think one that gets overlooked in the public consciousness a tad is that emotional flexibility is an executive function, right? And so that ability simply to put things into context and think about things differently. I was talking last night with a young woman who she took her first ACT this past weekend and had a full meltdown, panic attack at the start of the test and simply went home and didn't take the test. And part of this was she broke up with her boyfriend, you know, of 8, 9, 10, 11 months. And it was really hard. And so this was all in her head at the start of the test and blah, right? And kids are likely to go to college and find things to be challenging because they're, you know, new situations, right? And things they can't control. And it's a very different living environment than being at home. And we were gently, a little test prep therapy, I suppose, and sort of talking through this. And she was just kind of beside herself. And spend some time kind of helping her reframe this. I said, one thing that I love about these hard conversations that you're having with your now ex and trying to figure out what to do going forward is these are hard conversations to have. These are hard conversations to have. But the way that you develop an ability to do hard things is by doing hard things. And I said, when you look at the statistics, most people your age don't date. People don't date. You know, they either, you know, they get friend groups or they hook up and sexual gratification. I get that. But having a relationship is much more complex than having one too many beers and then, you know, getting sloppy with somebody. And I said, I said, whatever comes out of this for you and for this fellow, I said, I think you should really pause and give yourself and give him credit for the fact that you guys are having hard conversations about really adult feelings. And those skills are so incredibly important for whatever, whether it's this relationship or another relationship that persists. And how do you talk with your friends? And how do you talk to a professor? And how do you talk to a future employer? And these kind of things are so, so valuable. And she simply hadn't thought about it that way. There's a tendency, I think, for all of us, for parents to try to protect our kids and soothe kids. And they oftentimes are missing those opportunities. And, you know, my wife's a school teacher. And basically everybody who's been a teacher, you know, during, you know, through or after COVID says, you know, that, you know, the eighth graders act like sixth graders and the 10th graders act like eighth graders. And there's all this focus on catching kids up academically, academically, academically. And I know that a conversation you and I have had is much bigger concern about those executive functions and the ability to tolerate stress and frankly, run their own lives, because pretty much everything that kids learn, they're going to forget. But it really is these other set of skills that's so doggone important. So I worry that when we when we focus on the achievement and what gets kids into college and miss the opportunity for them to struggle in healthy ways with these other things, I think we have our priorities, it's too narrow a focus, you know?
Completely. I'm just thinking of when we were lecturing a couple of years ago in a suburb outside of Chicago and to 1,000 high school students at an assembly on creating a life that you want. Because so many kids grew up, just have no idea what's important to them, what they really value, what kind of life they want. And we were talking about just how grades are, we want you to be well-educated. Right. Research suggests it doesn't make very much difference. There's many ways to get educated in this world. There's so many people who are not good high school students who are going to be extremely successful. And this kid ends up and says, are you saying that we're kind of more than our grades? And at first we thought he was joking, but he was serious. After we've been just talking about this for 45 minutes about your school performance, and you're just like, he's incredulous. Are you really saying that? And then he gets a standing ovation. And so, yeah, I think that we do have this complete preoccupation with getting kids in the most elite colleges, thinking that's going to be their key to a successful life. And it's often not. If kids want to go to Yale or Princeton, I say go for it. That's fine. But don't think that you have to. Don't think that you can't have a successful life. I mean, so often when we're lecturing at a lot of elite high schools where a lot of wealthy and successful parents, and you say, how many of you didn't go to Ivy League schools? And almost everybody raises their hand.
Right.
I read recently where 0.8% of college students go to the top 12 colleges.
Wow.
Expand that out to the top 20. You know, maybe it's what, 1.5%, maybe something like that, maybe 2. But the idea that somehow that's the key to success is so crazy. Psychotic in terms of being so out of touch with the reality. And so, you know, part of our message is that think about yourself more broadly with your GPA. There's many ways that you can become educated in this world and develop yourself. And some people, you just have to be patient with yourself. It takes a while to figure it out. But the other thing is this question of who's really ready. In my work, I focus a lot on this readiness. So I see so many kids who, they're high school seniors, and somebody's still waking them up in the morning. Somebody's still checking on them. If his teachers will call the parents, and he hasn't turned this assignment in.
Yeah.
That kind of thing where other people are really kind of holding a net under the kid to make sure he doesn't fall too far. And those are the kids. And the ones who are already burned out, they're just they're sleeping 4 hours a night as seniors, and many do, who just go to college, and there's just no way that they can cope with that kind of environment.
Yeah, let's go through a list. I mean, people who listen to this podcast are probably on board with the idea that it doesn't have to be Yale or jail, or they may have kids who are going to Yale and they're trying to keep them out of jail. But whether it's a kid who's got ADHD and learning disabilities and going to school and parents worry about how that kid will be successful with, you know, less support, less scaffolding at university than they experienced in high school, or, you know, to your point, kids who are highly academic and really good at school, but we worry about the burnout. Let's talk about some of the things parents can be looking at to assess and have, ideally, this is conversations with kids, not done to kids, about what do I want to see as a parent to feel confident you're going to do well in school? What are things that a son or a daughter wants to be focused on so that they feel confident going into school? Because one of the things we know, you know, coming out of COVID, with COVID really being a two-year exercise in avoidance, there are so many more children who are just anxious in all sorts of flavors. And it makes sense that kids are anxious, have some, you know, they're excited for college, but they also have some anxiety about college because of the novelty, the unpredictability, you know, right down the nuts, you know, the imposter syndrome that people experience, and then, of course, a lower sense of control. So what are kind of top things of mind for you that parents should be looking for and or, you know, the conversations that we have with our kids to say, look, maybe this is something we want to work on, you know, with this kind of 6 month lead up. Well, okay, 4 month lead up until college starts.
Yeah. What I started advising parents to do several years ago is to tell the kid, I'm looking forward to sending you to college. I'm looking forward to spending huge amounts of money to get you educated. Well, I'm not going to do it. If I took $60,000 and I just flushed down the toilet, you wouldn't respect me. But if I put down $60,000 tuition for you and you aren't ready, it's the same thing. And kids who go to school, who start college and they flunk the first semester, see a lot of kids, they talk to parents and they're going back on academic probation. Mm-hmm. They never do better the second semester. And they just aren't ready. And I feel that you think about how many young people can't afford housing. It's $6,000. You've got a pretty nice down payment on a house, you know, just so many families that I work with, they don't really have much for retirement. They saved it all for college. I want this to be a good investment. And so I advise parents to say, I want to send you, and I'm not going to send you until you're ready. And let's talk about what I need to see to know you're ready. Mm-hmm. And we outline some of that in the self-driven child, including things like just the self-care, being able to get yourself into bed, you'll stay adequately rested.
I was talking, you know, as a test prep guy, I talk with kids a ton about sleep, knowing that, you know, brains work better when they're rested. We learn better. We tolerate stress better. And a friend of mine asked me to talk with her grandson, who's this really, he's a really sharp kid, but he's got both ADHD and some OCD. And so explaining how much sleep deprivation really inflamed the symptoms of both of those. And so I asked him, so what time do you typically get to bed? And he said, on a good night, 12 or 1. And I said, on a bad night, he said, 3 or 4. I said, what time does school start for you? And he said, 7:40. And for most young people, they've kind of heard about sleep, but they really don't have an understanding of what a difference it makes. And we go back to those executive functions, that emotional flexibility. That same girl who broke up with her boyfriend, she's really having a hard time sleeping. And I just gently suggested some ideas that may help, because difficulty sleeping is a symptom of being anxious. And being anxious is an effect of being sleep deprived. So you got this beautiful circle, right? A negative spiral with this. And so with this girl and with this guy as well, I said, can you try an experiment for particularly this ADHD boy, where for 4 days, see if you can get 8 hours of sleep a night and see if it makes a difference. Instead, you know, can you do your homework in 3 hours rather than 5 or 6 hours? Because he's probably pretty inefficient how he's doing it. So I think, yeah, I'm 100% with you. For me, having a solid sleep schedule and being pretty consistently well-rested is, for me, arguably the single biggest input that makes it likely for kids to be able to both handle school and handle college living.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that there's a lot of kids who they don't have the academic skills yet. They're just really good college. And I'm just writing a couple of reports on kids now who I'm saying, I think they definitely have to have at least one gap year.
Yeah.
Where I want, they need more maturation of the prefrontal cortex, which is very rapid in late adolescence and young adulthood. And they also need to, they don't really have college level writing skills yet, college level reading comprehension skills. And the interesting thing is that as the prefrontal cortex developed, it starts to come online and process things it didn't used to process. So if you have problems with if you're not a very good writer of reading comprehension, not so good, as you get older, your prefrontal cortex starts to become more involved in those processes than it used to. And if the prefrontal cortex is involved, it's more thoughtful. You're more likely to find ways of compensating for things you couldn't do very well. So I look at the academic readiness in some cases, especially, are they tracking their own assignments? Are they turning them in on time? Are they preparing for tests adequately? If they need a tutor, can they schedule their own meeting with the tutor? Can they manage their academic schedule? That kind of thing. So if they can't do it as a senior, they aren't going to be able to do it 3 months later. In June, a few years ago, a kid who really nice kid, a bright kid, who had a rough senior year. He had some depression and got straight C's or something. Mm-hmm. And the parents come in June and they said, how do we get him ready to go to college in the fall? And I said, you don't. There's just not enough time. And the kid was in the room. I kept telling him, I said, you're smart enough to get a PhD. You go to medical school. It's a matter of timing. And the parents were kind of pissed. You know? They said, we're going to get a second opinion. I said, okay. So 7 or 8 days later, and they say, we can't thank you enough. What were we thinking?
Right.
And so he did some kind of gap year where the family didn't have a lot of money. He went to a ranch where he worked on a ranch for like 6 months. And so got room and board. And so it didn't really cost him much. And come home to a community college class. But he started college a year later, completely ready. And he nailed it. So many of the kids, it's not a matter of them not being smart enough or competent enough. It's a matter of them not being mature enough brain-wise, or not having learned how to take responsibility for the stuff they need to be responsible for once they go to college. You know, making their appointments, taking their own medication, managing their own technology. So many kids that I see, parents are on them constantly, and I understand this.
They're on them constantly
to get off the phone or not to sleep in their room or to stop playing video games. And until kids can manage that stuff, why living at home?
Well, and the thing that, and if I add to that, one of the things that I see all the time, and you more than I, are kids who are really bright and they have all these troubles with executive functions, right? And so it becomes easy for parents or for teachers or even for kids themselves to think that somehow this is an issue of character. If I'm so smart, why can't I do whatever? Shouldn't I be able to do whatever? And to understand that those executive functions and the relative maturity or immaturity of it is separate from your cognitive firepower, right? So I a lot of times see kids who are really bright and everyone knows that, and then they keep falling short because they, you know, can't get themselves to do the work. They don't hand it in. They whatever, you know, can't get themselves in bed, whatever. And you can get this kid can really internalize this negative self-talk, you know, and beat themselves up. And then oftentimes slide into, well, maybe I'm just not as smart as I thought I was, or as my parents thought I was. And to your point, it's not a question of whether that kid could do college level work and graduate level work. It's simply a matter of when he can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the most important executive functions is self-evaluation, which is, you know, I think we talk about this stuff from child, which is the tireder you get, the harder it is to really realize how hard you are.
Yeah. Well, because kids will often say, well, why is it then when I, you know, finally get like 10 hours of sleep, I feel even more tired than when I'm getting five or six.
Yeah.
And I share exactly that point because self-assessment, self-evaluation is another cognitive function that is impaired by sleep deprivation. I said, so imagine if you were a zombie, all right, you're a zombie. And then whatever, you eat more vitamins, you get a, you know, you get the vaccine, whatever, and you revert from being a zombie back to normal you. There's going to be an in-between time there when you feel like, God, I feel terrible. What on God's green earth have I been eating, right? You know? And you'll start to have this sense, right?
Yeah. Almost all of the kids with ADHD, particularly the boys, I beg them to take a year off doing something else before they go to college. The difference between an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old prefrontal cortex is so profound. And you think about these countries where in Europe or Israel, where kids, they travel or they do something for a couple of years. In Israel, they do either national service or military service for 2 years. And I'm hearing now that a lot of these kids in Israel now, where that are really turned out to be very smart people, they're starting college till they're 25. You know, they're doing something else first. And I think that I'm not necessarily suggesting that. And I'm saying the kids have the idea, it's a race to age 18. How far can you get to age 18?
Let me go back to a point you just made about, we're both great fans of Jessica Leahy, wrote The Gift of Failure and her most recent book, The Addiction Inoculation. I got a chance to read this before the kind of early version and had her on the podcast. And I tweeted out something like, if you don't have healthy ways to relieve stress, you'll turn to unhealthy ways to relieve stress. And she tweets back. She said, "Hey, would you like to write the Cliff Notes or Spark Notes to the addiction inoculation?" Oh, wait, that was it. And so, one of the things it seems to me that because people tend to live in worlds that involve stress, right? And stress is not a bad thing. It's having too much stress or not having a healthy way to relieve stress that bad things happen. And what she talks about beautifully is that if we don't have tools or processes or relationships by which we can lower stress, almost invariably people will turn to maladaptive, you know, to drinking, to drugs, to, you know, cutting, self-injury, you know, the hurting other people, on and on it goes. And so I know that one of the things you and I both talk about is asking young people, how do you blow off stress in a way that's healthy? What do you do? And so in my experience, when I ask kids about this, the most typical thing is that I'll exercise, right? Which there's a whole wonderful body of literature on that. You know, I'll spend time with my friends. We talk about sinuloopy and emergency stress relief. But I think it's worth parents having that conversation, really observing what do the kids do when they're spun up? How do they talk themselves down? And also for us as parents to really honestly pay attention to how do we lower our own stress? Because if the way that we lower stress is we just have a couple quick glasses of wine, that's what we've modeled for our children. And that's not the ideal tool that we would like to give to kids. I was talking with this girl some years ago and asked her just that, how do you blow off stress? And she said, what most kids do is that, well, I go on my phone and they distract themselves, which, okay, you stop the inflow of stress, but you don't increase the outflow. And she said, well, I just watch my shows. I just watch TV. And I said, well, that's a wonderful way to entertain yourself and distract yourself. I said, but if I may, that doesn't actually decrease stress any more than you could just smoke pot and you'd stop worrying about your problems. And she said, I swear to gosh, she said, well, that's what my parents do. And I said, I'm sorry. And she talked about kind of difficult family and a sister who's got a bunch of stuff going on. And she said, well, my parents just get high most nights of the week. And I thought,
Okay. I talked to a therapist yesterday, a sixth grade girl who I just tested. And the sixth grade girl has a lot of anxiety and depression. And she said that she goes on her phone and just watches YouTube or plays games. She says, my therapist says that's not a good way to relieve stress because that resource may not always be available. And she says, well, the average person spends 8.5 hours in front of a screen a day. The resource is pretty available.
It's hilarious. If you listen to the podcast, you've heard me talk about my kids. And my son, who's now in his last year in college, is ADHD. And so there's procrastination is sort of how he rolls, at least in part. And he texted me, this was, I think, back in November. Hey, Dad, do you have time to talk? My methods, my hacks or whatever aren't working. Do you have time to chat? And you may remember, but you were coming to my office to work on some stuff. And I said, happy to. Cool if I bring Bill in on this. And what he talked about was he'd work and work and work. And then he'd take breaks, you know, apply the Pomodoro technique. But what he would do is then go on his phone. And you gently suggested, well, that may not really be helpful in that it, you know, it's stimulating, but it's not really relaxing. And we don't really sort of cleanse the prefrontal cortex, particularly if you're doing work on a computer, than to do, you know, stuff on a phone may not be the best thing. And so one thing, because he's a musician, the way that you're a musician, say, well, you know, what if you, is there a piano? Well, it turns out there's a piano in the next room over. So he could work for an hour or whatever, and then go play music for 20 minutes and then come back, or going for a walk, or doing 20 pushups, or. So things that aren't, again, kind of cluttering up his prefrontal cortex. And so, again, for us as parents to pay attention to how do we kind of reset, you know, defrag our brains like we used to do with computers and model that for kids and talk with kids about this, because certainly because of COVID, everyone's default thing, as soon as they're bored, as soon as they're anxious, they pick up a phone and we don't have to go down the I think most people are on board with us and Tristan Harris and everyone else that it's a great tool for entertainment. It's a suboptimal tool for stress relief.
Yeah. This kid I mentioned, who I'm meeting with his parents today, and I'm talking to him tomorrow. And I talked to him when I tested him earlier this week about kids are most likely to use substances when they're stressed. And that my experience is that they need some alternative, and whether it's vigorous exercise or whether it's a yoga practice or whether it's meditation. And I told him that I've been practicing transcendental meditation for 50 years, and I just know hundreds of people who practice. And I only know of one person who's practiced for more than 2 or 3 years who didn't give up drinking, you know, at least excessive drinking, smoking pot, or smoking cigarettes. As their nervous system started to calm down. Yeah. I remember myself, I used to smoke pot and sometimes do psychedelics. I learned to meditate. And about a year later, I was supposed to go, I think, drop acid or something with a friend. And I was probably 24. And I came out of my afternoon medication feeling so clear and so happy. I thought, why would I screw this up? So I just never did again.
Wow.
You know? And I just think that the research on meditation and addiction is so powerful that it just kind of, even for kids who don't have real serious substance problems, but, you know, substance use disorders are extremely prevalent in kids in affluent families and high achieving schools, much more than the general population.
Right.
But at least in the mid-20s, strikingly higher. We've talked about this before. I think our hypothesis is that these kids grew up under tremendous stress and pressure. They don't really have healthy ways of using a release of stress or preventing stress. So they turn to substances. They get pleasure from the substance, but it doesn't lead to happiness. And it doesn't do what they want it to do. If you smoke a lot of pot, you don't have the next day. You're more anxious. It actually makes you more anxious. There's a lot of things to consider in terms of this question of who's ready for college.
Yeah, there are.
And I think that for me, if a kid can manage his own self-care, God, if kids can hold a job, that's a really good predictor of college readiness.
Right.
They're managing their own academic schedule. If they need help, are they taking responsibility for it? Are they attending their tutoring sessions? Could they schedule it themselves? Can they schedule appointments? Can they take their own medication? Can they call in their own refills? And the things that they have to do, to be thinking proactively about what do kids need to do in this very challenging living environment where the majority of kids are not very happy, the majority seek mental health services, the majority sleep 6 hours or less a night when they need 9 or 10, so profound sleep deprivation. What do they need to do to thrive in a situation like that?
Yeah, I think that's great. And your point about a summer job, I mean, when you think about managing your schedule, getting up on time, showing up on time, all the things are responsible. I mean, there are, you know, a gazillion opportunities to develop executive functions in doing that work. And in part, I've always talked with kids, if you treat college like, you know, a job or at least a part-time job where you go to class and you commit 2 or 3 hours a night for doing work, and if they really treat it like even a part-time job where you're in class 2 or 3 hours a day and do homework for 2 or 3 hours a day, in many ways, they have so much more time to do things that they're really, you know, socializing in sports and extracurricular activities than they do in high school because they just do.
Well, the research on that suggests that the average college student outside of class spends 15 hours a week working, and they spend like 40 hours socializing.
Wow.
It's not even a part-time job. You know?
Yeah.
It's like 30 hours a week.
Man.
And it's a lot. I mean, it's not very much work for
$70,000. Right.
$60,000 a year, or for $30,000 a year. And yeah. I think that, and certainly I don't want college to the experience of the social opportunities and the friendships. That is hugely important. And yet, I want kids also to take college like this is my education. And so many kids, I think that I see, they go through high school trying to do as little as possible as opposed to really developing themselves. And I like to see kids think about college as a way for this is a time for me to develop myself.
Yeah. And you know, so one more thing, if you have the relationship with your kid where you can credibly have this, have a conversation where simply ask him, what do you hope to get out of, not college generally, because it's hard for kids to pitch themselves 4 years down the road. What are you hoping to get out of the first semester of college? And of course, they don't really know college yet, but it gets them thinking, right? And there's something called mental contrasting. And this is Daniel Udingen, and she talks about WHOOP. And so what do I wish, right? So I want to have a strong start to school. I want to make some friends. I want to whatever. And then the O is what kind of the specific outcome and trying to make that granular, trying to make that as specific as possible. And then this is probably the most important part, trying to have kids articulate for themselves. So you can prompt them a little bit. What are some of the obstacles? What would stand in the way of those outcomes that they want? What could trip them up? What tripped them up in high school? Where did they fall short? Particularly again, for kids who, you know, have learning differences or ADHD or anxiety, any of these things. And then what's a plan? If this happens, where are you going to find resources? What helped you in the past? What do you think might help you there? Understanding that many of those same resources will be available at college, but kids are going to have to seek them out more than they do in high school. I mean, schools actually have an obligation to teach kids. In college, there's no obligation. You know, it's a different, I mean, these are adults. And so particularly for kids who are anxious, doing that work of here's what I want and here are the obstacles, and they can pitch themselves forward, or project themselves forward, and visualize in event of bad challenge A, here's what I would do. Even just the process of anticipating and making plans for things that are hard lower kids' stress, increase the sense of control that they feel, engage fully their prefrontal cortexes. And so you're really wiring brains to handle challenges, even just by doing in theory, it can be basically the same outcome as if the kids have actually done that. So there's a really fun book, by the way, Andrea Malcolm Brenner has a book called How to College and What to Know Before You Go. And so it's a pretty nice fold into our chapter on who's ready for college. And it's just kind of a list of all the stuff that can pop up. And so have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Do you know where you're going to do your laundry? All this kind of stuff. Because a lot of times kids get hung up on things, and even beyond their academics. And the more that we can help them pitch forward and anticipate things and then have a plan for that, the more confident they're going to feel. And frankly, as parents, the more confident we're going to feel that they've got a plan for navigating all those challenges that college can present.
Good point.
Well, Bill, always a pleasure. For those of you who have kids who have just graduated, we encourage you to reread the chapter of Who's Ready for College. For you got kids who are younger, even better, because you've got a longer ramp to do that. It's a wonderful time of year. It's an exciting time with all those hopes and dreams of kids going to college. And as Bill noted before, we want kids to go to college, but more so, we'd like them to actually succeed there and in a perfect world, even thrive. My partner and scribe and friend, Bill Stickshrude, and I'm Ned Johnson, and this is the Self-Driven Child Podcast. Thanks. Hey, folks. Ned here. Over the past 25 years, I've talked to countless parents of high school-age students who care deeply about their kids' education and how they deal with stress and the pressure to succeed. It can help parents to work with a team they trust won't just pile on more pressure to achieve better scores and grades. That's why I founded Prep Matters in 1997 to create a different kind of experience for test preparation and academic tutoring. This podcast and my books with my friend Bill Stickshrude reflect our company philosophy and approach to helping students. If you have a high school age student and would like to talk about putting a plan together, please get in touch with us. Visit our website at prepmatters.com. Or, while your kids may only text, you might want to actually talk with a person. If so, you can reach us at 301-951-0350.